This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
UN aid agencies warn the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, already one of the biggest in the world, is getting worse as famine looms and growing numbers of refugees flee to neighboring countries.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA from Geneva. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, one of the judges who sentenced former Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi to 20 years in prison narrowly escapes injury today from a car bomb. Days after dismantling the so-called jungle in Calais, French police clear another migrant tent camp in northern Paris. And a new type of drought-resistant grass could boost milk production by 40% for East African dairy farmers. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, one of the judges who sentenced former Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi to 20 years in prison narrowly escaped injury today from a car bomb. Justice Ahmed Abul Fouton was one of three judges who convicted Morsi last April in felony court. A parked car exploded in Cairo as the judge's car passed by. Officials call it an assassination attempt. Morsi was convicted last year of inciting violence between his supporters and security forces. 10 people were killed in the clashes. President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has arrested thousands of members of the Muslim Brotherhood as attacks on government facilities have increased. In other news in Egypt, the government has announced that an additional 1 million people will receive subsidy cards for food and fuel. The move follows yesterday's announcement that the Egyptian pound was being devalued as part of economic austerity measures. UN aid agencies warn the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, already one of the biggest in the world, is getting worse as famine looms and growing numbers of refugees flee to neighboring countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Food Program reports a 38-truck convoy carrying food for about 1 month arrived in the South Sudanese town of Yei on Friday. The agency says the food and other relief supplies will be a lifesaver for thousands of families who have been trapped in the area for 4 months because of fighting and insecurity. WFP spokeswoman Bettina Lucia says thousands of people in Yei and throughout South Sudan are fleeing intensified violence that stems from the country's nearly three-year conflict. She says they have been forced to leave their crops to rot in the field, adding to a growing problem of hunger.
Up to 4 million people, a third of the population in South Sudan, are severely food insecure, meaning a third of the country doesn't know where the next meal is coming from. The malnutrition is above emergency levels in 7 of the 10 states, nearly twice of the emergency threshold in 2 states. We are very concerned that the threat of famine is very real, that it could happen.
Lucia says humanitarian agencies have helped to stave off catastrophe so far, but she says funds to carry out life-saving operations are running out. She says WFP urgently needs $113 million for operations through January. In the meantime, the United Nations Refugee Agency reports the number of people fleeing South Sudan continues to grow. Last month, it says an average of 3,500 people fled to neighboring countries each day. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puyi says 9 out of 10 refugees are women and children, with most of the outflow, around 2,400 per day, arriving in Uganda.
Most of the arrivals are from equatorial regions, and they report armed groups harassing civilians, killings, torturing people suspected of supporting opposition factions, burning villages, and sexually abusing women and girls.
In recent weeks, says Puyi, refugees have increasingly used informal border crossing points, reportedly because armed groups are preventing them from using main roads. She says many have been forced to walk through the bush for days without food or water. The UNHCR says it is scaling up its operations in Uganda and in the other countries of asylum, Ethiopia, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, to keep pace with the growing refugee exodus from South Sudan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Cameroon has been seeing rising tensions this year between local workers and Chinese companies. Workers on two Chinese-led road projects are currently on strike, demanding better pay and working conditions. Cameroon government officials are trying to mediate the crisis, which has led to violent confrontations. Moki Edwin Kinziga has the story from Matoum, Cameroon.
The striking workers drummed like this all night for two nights. They work for the China First Highway Engineering Company in Matoum, some 80 kilometers to the south of the capital Yaoundé. Union leader and strike organizer Wan Yu Leonard says they decided their Chinese supervisors shouldn't sleep until the workers' demand were heard.
We are not well paid. Our categories are not respected. And our allowances, like housing allowance, lodging, feeding, also transport, none of that is respected. Can you imagine that on a project like this one? It is not normal.
Leonard says two-thirds of the 200 people working with the company do not have formal contract agreements. The company is building a 250-kilometer road linking Yaoundé with the country's commercial capital, Douala. The strike has now spread to a second Chinese company building a road linking the capital to the airport. Armand Balakok is an engineer on strike.
Nous réclamons un directeur des ressources humaines camerounais mise en application.
He says they want a Cameroonian to be appointed to head the Department of Human Resources as spelled out in the Cameroon Labour Code and as recommended by Cameroon authorities before the contract to construct the road was signed. He says they also want all their advantages to be respected as spelled out in the collective labor contracts they signed with the Chinese company. 4 days into the strike, the government called a crisis meeting, but the workers refused negotiations without their Chinese supervisors present. Some Chinese staff left the work site after violent confrontations. Several local workers were injured when police intervened. Several striking workers have been arrested and the company offices have been sealed. This is not the first time Chinese have faced problems in Cameroon this year. In March, miners in the eastern town of Betari Oya forced out Chinese gold mining operations, they said, had taken their livelihoods and were not living up to promises to develop the locality, something the Chinese companies disputed. Angry locals slashed tires, vandalized equipment, and beat up some Chinese miners. Last month, Cameroon deployed its navy to seize illegal fishing vessels in the Atlantic Ocean, many of them Chinese, according to authorities. Tensions had been rising with locals who say foreign trawlers are overfishing for export, raising prices at local markets. The Chinese embassy did not respond to requests for comment on this story. But China's ambassador, Wei Wenxiao, spoke about Chinese companies in Cameroon during a ceremony last month. He spoke through a French interpreter. He says Chinese working in Cameroon have always accomplished their task diligently in all aspects, including health and infrastructure building in towns and in the countryside, and he is satisfied with their work. Cameroon's Minister of Public Works, Emmanuel Nganou Djoumissi, is organizing the talks on the road workers' strike.
Je dois avouer que les entreprises se conforment.
He says he has talked with the Chinese companies. He says they are struggling to meet deadlines and facing problems related to late disbursements of funds and some administrative bottlenecks in the compensation of people to be displaced before roads are constructed. Njumese told VOA that Cameroon is eager to work with international partners of all nationalities. But he said the government will stop the contracts of any companies found to be violating the terms of those deals. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Matombe, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 16 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. One of the judges who sentenced former Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi to 20 years in prison narrowly escapes injury today from a car bomb. UN aid agencies warn the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, already one of the biggest in the world, is getting worse as famine looms and growing numbers of refugees flee to neighboring countries. And days after dismantling the so-called jungle in Calais, French police clear another migrant tent camp in northern Paris. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Morocco's Interior Ministry has announced the arrest of five terrorism suspects in the northern city of Tetouan. The government says they were undergoing combat training in a nearby forest and were about to join Islamic State forces in Iraq, Syria, or Libya. Morocco says it has dismantled about 30 suspected terrorist cells in the past year. One cell included 10 women and children. Security has tightened in Marrakesh, where UN climate change talks are to begin on Monday. Well, as we mentioned, Morocco is hosting the UN Climate Conference, which opens Monday and runs until November 18th. Experts say the meeting is a crucial step following the historic Paris Climate Agreement reached a year ago. Morocco has a new initiative called Adaptation for African Agriculture, or AAA. It aims to help agriculture adapt to rising global temperatures and ensure food security. Mohamed Aid Kadi is president of the Moroccan General Council of Agricultural Development. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the new initiative.
In Africa, climate change acts as a threat to food and security. It can reverse the gains achieved through the Millennium Development Goal process, and it can also jeopardize the success of the Sustainable Development Goals. AAA is a new initiative launched by Morocco to enable African agriculture to simultaneously improve productivity, reduce vulnerability, increase resilience, and manage natural resources more sustainably. It is closely aligned to realizing the ambitions agreed in COP21 in Paris last year, and also it is closely aligned with the associated finance commitments that were made last year in Paris.
So why Africa and its agriculture are particularly affected by climate change when it's not a major source of carbon emissions?
Achieving the goal of limiting the average global temperature rise to 2 degrees Celsius, as set in the Paris Agreement, will be, in my view, challenging, if not impossible, without leveraging the potential of the agriculture sector. Africa plays a key role in the global climate system, and the carbon released into the atmosphere as a result of deforestation, fires, and forest degradation that are taking place in Africa. This is, by the way, what I would call Africa's carbon cycle. Scientific evidence so far indicates that Africa seems to be a carbon sink, meaning that it takes more carbon out of the atmosphere than it releases. This implies that Africa contributes to reducing the greenhouse effect, thus helping mitigate the consequences of climate change. But Africa is already disproportionately affected by the impacts of climate change due to its overdependence on grain-fed agriculture. African farmlands and ranch lands are increasingly degraded, causing farmers to face declining yields. Economic and environmental conditions in Africa are already fragile, and this will further erode as food production declines, disease increase, clean water becomes increasingly scarce, and large populations move in search of resources. Such change will add significantly to existing tensions and can facilitate economic collapses, massive human migration, and more importantly, potential conflicts. I use Mohammed to say that Africa has already entered the age of consequences.
How African agriculture and adaptation are sources of solutions for climate change and food insecurities?
The AAA initiative stands for the adaptation of African agriculture, is designed to generate mitigation, adaptation, and food security co-benefits through well-targeted investments that can improve natural resource management, easing the pressures on deforestation, and improving soil health and access to water.
Mohamed Ayed Kadi is president of the Moroccan General Council of Agricultural Development. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. Well, a new study released ahead of next week's UN climate conference in Morocco says new grass varieties could boost milk production by 40% and generate an economic boom for East Africa's struggling dairy farmers. Differences in forage and feed quality are a key reason cattle in parts of sub-Saharan Africa create more methane per kilo of meat or milk produced than in other parts of the world. Scientists say climate-smart varieties of Braccaria grass are drought-resistant, easier for cows to digest, and decrease their methane gas emissions. Dr. Solomon Mwendia, a co-author of the report, is a forage agronomist for the International Center for Tropical Agriculture, or CIAT. He explains why East African farmers will benefit from the new type of grass.
The species called Braccaria, and originally it's a tropical crop that comes from Africa. But it has been developed through breeding and selection. It can be able to assist smallholder farmers because it has better quality in terms of being utilized. If the fibers in it allow, the animals are able to utilize it better.
Is it easier to grow, and will farmers be able to access this?
At the moment, to access the planting material in forms of seed is not very efficient. But once the private enterprise picks it up, it should be able to solve that problem. And the farmers will be able to access the seeds. Already, like I know there is a company interested in trading the seeds. It's called Advantage Crop Limited. They are in the process of importing some of their lines into African region, and specifically starting off with Kenya.
Right now, what are dairy farmers having to do in terms of getting grass for their livestock?
A good question. At the moment, farmers have been mainly using Napier grass. Napier grass is the most commonly widely used in East Africa by up to 70%. Yes, it is high yielding, but it also has its own shortcomings. Since 1998, there was a disease called smut disease, an outbreak that has been reducing its production matter drastically. Also, we were still trying to solve that. Another disease was reported around 2004, still affecting Napier, and it's called the stunt disease. These two diseases have the potential to actually reduce the harvestable amount that the farmer can be able to take their animals. Now, with the Braccaria that has not shown any of these diseases, we look at it as an additional option into the basket of options the farmers have at their disposal.
What will it mean for them from an economic standpoint?
Yeah, this crop, it can increase, first of all, the animal performance, in terms of both the milk production and even for used for meat production, can increase the productivity per cow per day. And that in terms of rural household nutrition is very key in addition to household incomes in an African context where we're talking of smallholder farmers keeping roughly between two to three animals in their small holdings.
This new grass will be introduced at the climate conference that is coming up next week in Marrakesh, Morocco. What are your expectations once this is introduced?
I anticipate there will be a lot of demand in terms of the forage material so that people, especially farmers, they can be able to make the difference at their farm level. So I expect a situation where there will be increased demand for the planting material.
Dr. Solomon Mwendia is a forage agronomist for the International Center for Tropical Agriculture, or CIAT. He spoke with me from Nairobi. And that wraps up this edition. New allegations about ties between the DRC's Electoral Commission and a bank linked to the president's family have sparked calls for an investigation. William Clowes reports from Kinshasa. The allegations come amid heightened tensions about delayed elections.
A Belgian newspaper published a report last week saying that the Congolese Electoral Commission had paid at least $2.4 million in fees to a bank with links to DRC President Joseph Kabila. The paper also said that the commission had withdrawn $7.5 million in cash from the bank, BGFI, for reasons that are unclear. The claims relate to a $25 million credit facility the bank extended to the Electoral Commission, which is known as the CENI. DRC elections were supposed to be held this month, but have been postponed till at least April 2018. The government has claimed that CENI's lack of financial resources is one of the main reasons behind the delay. The president of the Congolese Association for Access to Justice, George Kapiamba, spoke to VOA.
C'est encore plus grave en ce qui concerne les moyens.
He said that the revelations are even more serious because they concern the resources put at the disposal of the CENI, and because the Electoral Commission pretended it was unable to organize elections in the constitutional timeframe on the grounds that it did not have the money. Kapiamba has written to Congo's Attorney General asking him to investigate, but he does not expect his request to be acted upon. Based upon our previous experience, Kapiamba said, we are not convinced that the Attorney General can do it with the independence that we would like. Kapiamba claims that those with resources or who belong to the ruling political family can obtain protection, whatever the gravity or degree of the acts they commit. The government of Belgium has also called for a full investigation. Both CENI and BGFI have denied any wrongdoing. According to the bank, the fees are in no way unusual for a line of credit of this size, while the CENI's president has claimed that the cash withdrawals were made to pay salaries, rent vehicles, and buy fuel in remote parts of the country which are unserved by banks. The disclosures have attracted extra attention because an adoptive brother of Kabila is BGFI's CEO, and one of the president's sisters was listed as the owner of 40% of the bank as of October 2014. The allegations, the sources of which is documents handed to the media by a former BGFI employee, also target Albert Yuma, president of Gécamines, the state mining company and a close ally of Kabila. The Belgian newspaper article says that in 2013, the central bank deposited $43 million in a BGFI account held by a food processing company chaired by Yuma that was never repaid. The same bank reportedly extended a loan of $30 million to Gécamines in September 2015 and deducted interest payments worth several million dollars on two separate occasions. Yuma and the bank have denied any wrongdoing. They say that the accusation about the central bank diverting public funds to Yuma's company is false and without foundation, and that the second interest payment was taken from Gécamines due to a mistake, which was rectified. Kapiamba told VOA that he is unconvinced by the explanations, but unfortunately the Congolese justice system does not allow the population to confirm or quash the allegations. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On November 8th, American citizens will exercise their right to vote and choose their next president. VOA is providing comprehensive coverage of this unique democratic process. Who is going to earn the trust of the American people to lead the nation for the next 4 years? Find out right here on VOA.